time for the In the Conversation podcast with funny man Damian Lemon and the voice of your choice, Ali Muhammad.
This is Damian Lemon, and this is In the Conversation, the podcast. Yeah, y'all, it's me again. Ali is still away, but in the meantime, between time, you know, I'm out here to protect this streak. You know, talking to y'all, see what's good. Y'all chilling? Yeah? Okay. Shit, yeah. It is cold. Hell fuck. Yeah, that's crazy. Okay. Well, listen, we'll get to that in a second. Anyway, this week I did not come by myself. Pause. This week I am not on the motherfucker. This is a conversation. This is not going to be a dialogue, or, well, it's going to be a dialogue. It's not going to be a monologue. It's going to be me, and we got our in the conversation political analyst. You know, one of the illest, very esteemed colleague. You know, man out of Cleveland. I want y'all to put your hands together. Y'all already know him. Give it up for my man, Cameron Trimble. Cameron, what's cracking with you?
What's good? What's good, Damian? What's good? What's good to the end of the conversation? Listeners worldwide.
Mm-hmm. The conversationalists. Yes, yes.
All the conversationalists worldwide. Mm-hmm. You know they worldwide.
That's what I hear. That's what they be telling me. I heard I got an email from Tanzania. I didn't, but I'm talking shit. But yeah, motherfuckers is worldwide. We out here, we worldwide, like the web. What's good with you, man? What's good with you? How you been?
Man, I've been good, you know. I think it's been a minute since I've been on the pod, but this has been a wild and crazy year. I think that's the understatement of the year. You know, in politics, business, moving and shaking around the country, actually getting a little international with it too. Just got back from London, so doing some political stuff out there. So I'm excited, man.
Nice.
Always happy to talk to you.
I appreciate that. You was out in London on a political situation? What's going on?
Yeah. I'm getting up on my speaking and training. And okay. I spoke at the London School of Economics and Policy. It's one of the top universities in Europe. I gave a presentation on digital campaigning to people getting their master's in their master's students. So it was about maybe 25 students. They brought me out there to teach them as these kids are looking to, well, I won't say kids, but as these students are looking to graduate and get into the actual business of politics around that. So that was cool. And then also the Global Political Tech Summit. Tech conference is happening in Berlin, Germany in January. They had a pre-event at the same time. So I did a panel out there. So it was cool. First time in London.
So oh, really?
For almost, about 4 or 5 days, move around.
Did you hit Nando's? Oh, yeah.
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, damn. You know what's so funny?
Nando's Peri Peri?
Yeah, but you know what's so funny? Because I know you went to school out in D.C., and D.C. is the only place in America, to my knowledge, that has a Nando's. I was introduced to Nando's the first time I ever went to London. And
oh snap, I didn't know.
Yeah,
that.
It's a London, I don't know if it's a London, full London thing, or because I think it, you know, it's some, it's also like a I don't say South Africa, it's an African, I don't know what country, but somewhere in Africa, it may have, I don't know if it started there, but it's the culture, it's the cuisine of that. But anyway, when I had Nando's,
I had Slim Chickens.
They not down with the people that do the chicken shop videos, are they?
No, when I say the craziest, it was like a Slim Chickens. It's kind of like a Raising Cane's, not exactly Popeye's spot, but it was everywhere. And then I was like, oh, what is this? I posted it on my stories and people like, oh yeah, we got that out here in the South. I was like, I ain't never heard of Slim Chickens, but it was everywhere.
Yeah, well, Nando's is like one of the best things that I've eaten out in, and as far as franchises go out in London, because London, the cuisine could get a little touch and go, in my opinion.
But, no, I agree. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, you got to go to a Like I went to an Italian spot. No, I definitely was polling people all on social media, like, where should I eat? Where should I eat? So a lot of people sent me like their favorite spots. So I just was going places like that. I wasn't trying to mess with the like, dude, do you want the brats and corn and the potatoes and stuff? I was like, no, I'm trying to eat real
Okay.
food. So it was
Anything
cool.
stand out?
I wish I could say it did. Food wise, nah. Food
Okay.
wise, nah. I did go to two different bars. You know what I mean? I'm a huge James Bond fan, and
Okay.
you know James Bond is that. So I was like, man, let me. I was drinking straight dirty martinis, shaken, not stirred. And I had this one brother who was my bartender, and I was like, that's the most care I've ever seen in a dirty martini ever. Like, and so that was impressive. And
What
then
was it about?
they
What was it? What talk to me? What the presentation like? Talk to what was the
The
care?
presentation, the care, like
Good olives.
did
What's up?
good. The olives were like tasted extremely fresh, not like they had just been in under the bar all day. It wasn't too cold. I mean, and like I said, they asked if I wanted shaken or stirred. I've never in America been asked if I wanted
Hilarious.
shaken or stirred. They just give you martini. You say I want a dirty martini, it just comes back. Every time I ordered one, probably ordered like at three different spots, they all asked that question unprompted. I was like, oh, this is a thing.
It's that James Bond culture.
Yeah, so that was it just was the presentation. You know, I know there's black people in London. I'm not that ignorant, but it's still, you know, in London, somebody doing the British accent in your face. You know, I'm still in a little bit of a shock, and I don't even want to try to give a British accent, but I just thought the whole presentation, the vibe he had, his outfit was dope. It was a nice pub, as they call them. It was cool. It was even, didn't spill a drop. And then they make you think it's not that expensive because it says like, oh, this is 14, but it's 14 pounds. So still like $18, $19, but
Now, what was it, a gin or a vodka martini? Where'd you go?
no, I did vodka martini. I did vodka martini.
Interesting. Gotcha. I hear that. I'm not sure if, I think, yeah. I'm not sure if gin is the traditional. I don't know. But I'll tell you this.
No, I've done gin. You do both.
I was going to say, because I had a good gin weekend this weekend. I was heavy on it. Not heavy, but I had gin a couple times this weekend. And, gin is always a choice. You know what I'm saying? And I was cool with it. I was cool.
Gin is a daytime drink, though. I feel like the sun needs to be out for me to be drinking gin. Like gin at night, I don't know. It just don't lead to good decisions to me.
I could see. I mean, I could see that. I guess I could see that. I guess I could see that. I mean, shit. Gin in the daytime might lead to some crazy shit, though. You know what I'm saying? It's where it's going to steer you. Where it's going to steer you. But I do like gin. It's one of those, like I said, it's a choice. I do like to move around when it comes to the different spirits every so often, just so sometimes I like to recognize that I am drinking poison. You know what I mean?
Is that what Jen does? Is that
All of
what
this
Jen
shit is
does for you?
poison if we be at 100, but it's just like sometimes you just used to the poison. You just like, oh, this tastes like the poison I had the other week. But when you go from whiskey to gin, the shift is like, oh, right, yeah, this shit. This could be a problem, and it kind of engages the responsibility element of my drinking. It's like, all right, D, be cool. This shit could go left. Sometimes I like to be present. Sometimes if I'm drinking the same shit all the time, it's just it ain't even, you know what I mean? It's not even registering, you know.
It lull you into a comfort area, a comfort
Rock you to
zone.
sleep,
Next
yeah.
thing you know, you've fallen asleep.
Looking crazy. But yeah, man. So that's what's up. So out in London. Nice. And then I know you just recently announced that and I'm gonna make sure I got this right. You are co-hosting on SiriusXM. What's the name of the show and who's your
It's
co-host?
the Urban View Morning Show every Tuesday, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m., channel 126 on Sirius XM. please check in. It is my host is Omi Bell. She's a noted strategist. She's the CEO of Black Girl Ventures, so she helps get people, Black women and Black women-owned companies, financing. We met years ago on a financial panel out in Vegas, actually, and then we've just stayed in contact. And this is Urban View Morning is Monday through Friday, 7 to 10 a.m. It was the slot that was held by the late, great, have you ever heard of Joe Madison? He was like he's like a really influential, like 30, 40 years legend in the radio game. Mm. He passed away a few years ago. And so his daughter, Karen Hunter, took over his slot. But then instead of her being on every day, because she already had her own show on Sirius, like one day or something, they have a rotating host every weekday. And so she already had a second radio show called The Omi Bell Show every Sunday. And she invited me on to be a guest about a month and a half ago. And we already had a relationship. She invited me back the next week and she's like, I'm getting really good feedback. And we talked through it, kind of been doing a test run. And then she's like, I want you to be my official co-host on the show. So we reach in millions of people every Tuesday from 7 to 10 a.m. talking politics, a little bit of culture. Most recent episode, I think we really got caught up in I think we talked a lot about the Jasmine Crockett stuff. We talked a lot about different Trump issues. We talked about Black farmers, and we had a special guest, like the president of the National Black Farmers Association, how they getting screwed out of all this money. So we kind of go there, but it's plain speak. I think my role is more of the technical data, political insider. Omi is definitely more of the commentator / elevated every woman. I'll call her that. She's the elevated every woman. So it's good. Nice. We get to have callers. That's cool.
Nice. I mean, so y'all do it live, 7 to 10.
Okay. Live every morning, nice. 7 to 10.
Nice. That's what's up. Congratulations on the gig. Yeah.
Thank you.
Now, I'm definitely familiar with Karen Hunter. I've listened to her show. I know her from back in the day as a writer and all of that. So, yeah, that's cool. Yeah, man.
Trying to expand the media empire, you know, still got the podcast clicking.
Mm-hmm.
Hit politics.
Okay.
We got season 5 starting in 2026.
Okay.
Already got a few episodes in the can. Trying to work on bust a few other moves over the next year. You know, we're just trying to build it out piece by piece.
All right. That's what's up. Yeah, you're moving and shaking, man. I always like to hear that. So you said that this is, and I forget the word you use, it wasn't chaotic, but it was a very maybe exciting year for politics this year. Do you feel that this was more, I mean, I know Trump is showing his ass for sure, but like in the past few years, what do you think the biggest difference is from what you see in the midst of it all? Because I know you be on the ground, you moving around, you know what I mean? Like you're super embedded in a lot of this and you see things oftentimes before a lot of us see them. So like what's your take on all of that? And that the basic, yeah.
I would say, from my view of politics in general, this has been the most, and I'm not saying this as a hyperbole, this is the most consequential year in terms of stripping and changing and altering the fundamentals of how our American political system works.
Mm-hmm.
More than any year of my adult life. So that's the last 20-ish years.
Okay.
I would have said that the time that might have been different, you would have to go back to George W. Bush after the towers, and then when we put in with the Patriot Act and a lot of different surveillance things and things that changed, you know what I mean, like how we all of a sudden got TSA and Department of Homeland Security, and now all those things seem super regular and normal to us. But those, remember, there was a time when you could just walk up to a plane and get on, and it wasn't as it, and there wasn't all these different phone taps, wiretaps, all the different ways the government was able to tap into you. This year, just in terms of not just on a norm standpoint, but in terms of the kind of presidential powers, the dismantling, I mean, they essentially are dismantling the entire Department of Education, USAID, which people was like, yeah, why are we giving money to these overseas? I mean, we dismantled an entire department that was part of America's soft power in terms of being able to provide medicine and certain resources to other parts of the world that allow us to do business in those world, that allows us to make sure that these other part of the world aren't fucked up, so those people don't come over here. I think in terms of our tax laws, this beautiful big bill that they've been calling our beautiful ugly bill, how that changes so many different like tax laws and incentives. So many things have changed, both that we're paying attention to and we may not realize as much, but are being stripped away kind of in our face. And it's the reason why, think about how many different of these political, the political protests that are consistently happening. They're happening so often that they're not even really getting the huge news that they used to. So I think this is a consequential year. Like, they are coming, that Project 2025, they are coming 1,000 miles an hour. I mean, Black history erasure is crazy. Taking out any, I don't know if you just saw most recently, they announced that you can, this is something that feels petty as I don't know what, but it's also super racist. You, on a normal government holiday, you should be able to get an access to,
national parks.
Public parks, national parks. They took that away on Juneteenth and Martin Luther King's Day, but then they made it free for Trump's birthday, which is not a national holiday, by the way. And they didn't do it for any other national holidays. They just literally specifically Juneteenth and MLK Day. Stuff like that, like taking a, hey, go around to all the military and no longer make swastikas considered like offensive material, so people can have swastikas on their body. They can have it in, they can have it in their cabins if they're like on a Navy ship, any of that type of stuff. The dismantling of diversity, equity, inclusion, because I think when we say DEI, you know what I mean, it makes it sound like, oh, that's just some whatever. We're taking away diversity, we're taking away equity, and we're taking away inclusion as a thing that even saying that looks crazy. And having all of the major companies, media companies, bow down to them. Saw what happened to Jimmy Kimmel, Stephen Colbert. So much is happening like right in our face, and it's happening on a daily basis. So when I say, I don't even like to call it interesting because it doesn't positively interest me, but it has been one of the most consequential election year. I mean, not election year, it's years in politics, I would say, in modern history.
Yeah, I agree. Now, let me ask you, do you think the Democrats is tired of getting mushed and they're going to finally fight a little bit? And let me ask you this. How did you feel about the government shutdown and then the, some may say, the folding on the Democratic side for maybe nothing? What was your takeaway from that?
So I had personal feelings and then like thinking about the larger stuff. Like, personal feelings is, you know what I mean, my sister is a nurse who works for the military and she was furloughed. You know what I mean? Luckily, her husband is also in the nursing profession and he doesn't work for the government. But they got a daughter. You know what I mean? They're hardworking people. You know what I mean? We having to find ways to help be supportive and stuff like that. financially, I knew, coming from working in government, knew a ton of different people who were affected. I got people close to me in the military, in the reserve and active military who weren't getting paid. So you want to see your people like taken care of, in addition to so many different people I know who work on Capitol Hill. I know most people don't really care about them, but those are tens of thousands of people who just for a month plus just not getting paychecks and aren't sure when they're going to get their next paycheck as we go into the holiday season. So you want to see it not, you don't want, you want, you know what I mean? You want this to keep working. Even if the government ain't working perfect, at least we need these people getting paid and SNAP benefits and all that stuff. But I think the folding in the leadership and how it was positioned was a political play that I understood the political calculation, but I think they misunderstood the cultural calculation of what it did for supporters, what it did for people who were finally like, you know what, Democrats got a backbone, and this is what, this is something that's really going to happen. Because as you've seen, or maybe you haven't seen, the whole point was we're going to open it back up so we can now negotiate and figure out how to make sure the healthcare premiums don't go up. Mm-hmm. And then the Republicans are saying, you know what, we're not going to vote on that anymore. So they basically got duped. Like, they opened it back up, and the one thing they were holding out for is not going to happen. So
damn,
them healthcare premiums are just going up.
It's crazy. It is crazy. And it feels, to your point, it feels like it's culturally disconnected, right? You didn't start all of this sacrifice, and you absolutely, sacrifice is fucked up, especially when you're going against people who feel, who seem to be absent of humanity. You know, they'd rather, you know, they'd rather starve than to see you eat. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Exactly.
So they were some cold-blooded people, but on a certain level, to your point, it felt as though the narrative started to change course, and people were like, they were not falling for the misinformation and the bullshit narratives, and people to your, you know, like, yo, they okay, we in it. We in it. There's a lot of people like, okay, we sacrifice it. We go in, and this starts to feel like the energy of revolution.
Resistance.
Yeah, like it feels active. It doesn't feel so passive, hands in the pockets, like I said, being mushed. Like, it felt like, nah, hold up, hold my jacket. You know, when, you know, the prelude to a fight, you know what I'm saying? Taking your glasses off. Oh, hold it now. Fuck that. You know, you start throwing your hands up.
Girls put their hair in a bun.
Yeah, all of that. All of that. It felt like that. And then it was a handshake. It was a handshake. And the person they shook their hand had their other hand behind their back with their fingers crossed. Like, no. We got you. So
I always say this, though. As much as the Democrats in the Democratic Party, people may feel some type of way, isn't it kind of messed up that we essentially have seeded the, like you said, the Republicans are cold-blooded people who would rather starve than see you eat, and we're just okay with that. Like, we have a two-party system, and they both should be running the country, but it's like, oh, we already know they don't care about poor people, they don't care about the people, they don't care about our rights, they're willing to screw us over, they're all for corporations. Like, that's almost baked into the cake, knowing that about mm-hmm. Republicans mm-hmm. and people still support them, and they put all the blame. As much as I'm not trying to necessarily just give a full cop out to the Democratic leaders that did want to open up the government, because I understand they represent people and people are hurting, and they were politically safe. The ones that did vote for it, none of them are up for election next year. So they were like, you know what, maybe people forget in 2 years when I'm up for a reelection. Mm-hmm. But we can't just come down on the Democratic Party for not holding out, when it's like, no, we still got to realize this other party is the one who did it. Yeah. And they just don't care. And it's like, we kind of have like seeded that to where, yeah, let them mess stuff up. Let them be throw temper tantrums and screw over people and be all pro corporations, like 100% pro corporation. And the Democrats will have to be the responsible ones in the room. So it's kind of, it's like a weird place where we are as the people in terms of who our political leaders and the political parties are, at least in America.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's, to that point, I think there's a couple things that go on with that. One, I feel like the Republicans have been kind of usurped by Trump. It's the party of Trump. Trump run that show. There's a lot of, you know, the word of the era now seems to be capitulation. You know what I'm saying? It's a lot of people that they want the proximity to power, or they don't want to be on this man's bad side or whatever, whatever. So they kind of go along to get along. The Republican Party itself has been compromised. But it's really led by that man and what he's doing and how petty he can be. And then I also think on a certain level, the Democrats have this. Sometimes it feels like they have this identity of, like you said, being the adult in the room, right? And it's I don't know if that really serves anybody. We all adults, but if one adult is throwing shit all around, you know what I'm saying? You're just going to just people throwing shit at you, or you going to start, you know what I mean? Something got to happen. Something needs to be some type of reaction. I think there needs to be, feels like some type of energy, some type of fight, you know, like some type of fight. And there are people, there are stars in the party. I know, you know, Jasmine Crockett is one of those. We're going to talk about her in a second. You know what I mean?
Like AOC.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
You know, and then there's those old, you know, career politicians who kind of go under the radar, but they, you know, they got their money, they got their health insurance, they playing it to stay, you know, stay employed by the people, but they're not, they're just status quo. And a lot of times I feel like, and this is in both sides, on both sides, I think a lot of those people need to be moved up out of the way. I don't know how you can kind of identify, and I mean, obviously voting and people need to be very up on top of it and things like that.
And so that there goes, that's what everybody always says, like, you can get them out. I mean, it's not easy, but you can get them out.
Yeah, you got, sometimes you got to know they there. You know, some people are so low. Like, I watch what, like, Meet the Press or some of these shows. I forget. What's the one with, I think it's Meet the Press with my lady on there. Damn, I forget her name. She's a brunette. She goes hard on people. She had Ilhan Omar on there this past weekend, and had somebody else from the Republican side who was just a stuff suit that was just carrying on the narrative of some lies and misinformation. But I've never seen this guy before.
Oh, you mean Kristen Welker?
Is that her name? Let me look her up.
That's the host of Meet the Press.
Yeah, I think we're talking about the same person. But
she's like racially ambiguous. You're not sure what she is?
No, this is a white woman I'm talking about. And it might not be Meet the Press. It might be the joint beforehand. No, it's not Kristen Welker. I'm looking at her. No, it's this. I forget this. It's not. It's the white woman. I forget her name. I'm going to try to find her name. It might not even be. It's probably not.
You're talking about Face the Nation with Margaret Brennan.
Yeah, I think that's who I'm talking about. Hold on.
That's who you're talking about. She's a brunette.
Yeah.
She just had Ilhan Omar on.
Yes. Yeah, yep, that's her. That's her. She go hard. I like her. She challenges you. She'll call you on some bullshit. She's like, you know, like, she's a tough interview. It's not like a bunch of softball questions. But she had Ilhan Omar on, and then she had the other guy before her. And, you know, like, again, it was just one of these people that are just kind of fade back into the party identity. Like, I don't know who this cat is. You know, there's certain people, you know, the people that are doing shit, that are kind of putting themselves out there for the scrutiny and everything else, that become stars of the party on both sides. And I think there's the other people that just kind of, and I don't want to sell them short, because they may actually be doing policy work. You know, a lot of people gave Joe Biden a lot of flack for the fact that he's not the most dynamic president, but he was over there working and getting shit done. You know what I mean? He's not Trump. He's not on fucking Truth Social at 3 a.m. He's not Obama. He's not hitting jumpers. He's not, you know?
Yeah, he's not golfing all day.
Yeah, he's not golfing all day. He's not golfing all day. He's not doing that. But I mean, even he's just not. He's just kind of straight across the board, you know. But there's a lot of those type of people, and I don't know. I guess everybody kind of needs to be. You know how, I don't know if this was Trump that did this, that said this, or where I saw this, but it's kind of like when you know there's a new person working at that just started in the C-suite, like they're under new management, and everybody mm-hmm. got to kind of show what they work on. You know what I mean? Like everybody might have to take a meeting with HR and tell us what projects mm-hmm. you're working on. You know, you might call it micromanaging yeah. or something, but I need to kind of know to get a tab on what's going on here and how are you helping the movement. Now, this is me on the mic not doing much. You know what I'm saying? But I just feel like if we want to really get some more momentum, we need people that feel like they're like really digging in. You know what I'm saying? Like when I see some of these people that seem to be actively going for it and calling shit out when it's some bullshit and like, you know, platforming or amplifying these ideas that they have, like to really like to bring these things to the public. I like that, you know, I like that. And if you're, you know, like, so I don't know. And I think that those people, I forget who the people are, you would know, and I would have to look them up. But the people that did vote for the shutdown, I think they should feel that. They should feel that, even if they were safe. And, if, you know, I'm like, maybe they need to, you know, like, the people need to know. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But anyway.
The people, I think the problem is like, it's the age-old question. When you talk to politicians, and they're always like, well, citizens need to be more engaged.
Right.
And then people will say, well, it's on you to tell me. And it's like, well, if I put it on social media, I put it on my website, I have open forums where you can show up. What else do you need me to do? They're like, well, send me ads. It's like, well, ads cost money. So are you going to give me money to, are you going to contribute to my campaign so I can just tell you and market to you what I'm doing? And pay market rates, and that doesn't seem like a good use of money. But we are in such a celebrity, market-driven, fractured media landscape economy. It's kind of like, damned if you do, damned if you don't. And it's like, because I, as a communicator, like that's the role I play in politics and communications, advertising, digital engagement. We always are trying to solve that. It's like, well, how much onus do you put on the people to pay attention to what the information that is out there? Because mm-hmm. there's tons of information. When forget all the federal stuff, go down to the school board level. Man, I can't believe they got these new taxes because of these new property taxes. I can't believe they got this happening. City council meetings are usually open to the public. Mm-hmm. But if you ever been to you go anywhere in America, I guarantee you most city council meetings are not full.
Oh yeah,
most school board meetings are not full. Anybody can walk into these joints.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's tough as far as communications go and all of that. I think there should be just a website called "Who's in Charge of This Shit," and you just put your zip code in, and they tell you who's relevant to you. You need to know about this person, that person, that person. Now, still, we would need to, as citizens, take initiative to at least go on that site, but somewhere that there is just a centralized platform to where all of this information lives, and everything else is gravy. If you want to do mailers, that's fine. If you want to do TV ads, that's fine, whatever. But if I want to research these people, I just put in my address or my zip code, and all these people, it's like little flashcards come up. This is such and such. You turn it around and you see their, I don't want to say their stats, but you see what they've been working on for the last, you know, their last term, what's been big wins, what's what they're in the moment of, you know, whatever, however they want to communicate it. So it just feels like it's a little bit more accessible. And mm-hmm. then maybe people will be a little bit more informed on making these decisions, or even on that same site. Snap got cut. Who's responsible? Or this, that, you know what I mean? Like, we need names. We need names.com. Some shit like that.
What would you do? I got to take it the next step further. Go ahead. What would you do with the names?
I'm keeping an eye out on them. I'm keeping an eye out on them. And if I'm somebody that's upset, I'm tweeting about them. Just like I'm tweeting about somebody I don't like on a fucking reality TV show. Such and such ain't shit. Did you see they did this? You know, this is the motherfucker that folded. Da-da-da-da-da. And we might have to meme shame them and whatever the fuck. Unfortunately.
I think that's where we got to realize is that that's what's changed. And that's what Trump kind of has ushered in. Trump is trying to kind of basically ushered in the
reality of it.
The absence of shame, because he's like, you know what, people are gonna talk about me, so what? It didn't start with Trump. I think Trump popularized it. To me, it really started with, if you want to be honest, Dick Cheney under Bush, who just, yeah, I'm gonna start a war. I don't care if he looked me up. He just didn't care. He didn't care about public opinion polls and stuff. He was just doing what he wanted to do. And then you had the Tea Party under Obama, who just like, you know what, we're about to be brash and unapologetic of how we're going to push stuff in politics on a national level. But Trump took it to a whole nother, like, once we let Trump get president the first time with the grabbing by the crotch and the racist stuff, all the things we knew about him, all the bankruptcies, all the accusations, and then we elected him president. Then he spent 4 years, got impeached multiple times, lost all this money. All his grifts start coming to the light, got indicted however many 30 some odd times. And then we elected him again. He kind of gave everybody a blueprint, like, oh, man, just because people tweeting, they still got to go to work. They still going to do what we say. And like, what are you going to, basically, he's always like, what are you going to do about it? He's kind of one of those people. And there's a whole group of people in America and around the world who've empowered him to be that way.
Oh, for sure. There's a lot of people that empowered him to be that. Well, one, it was grabbing by the pussy, right? So we got to say that, because if we say grabbing by the crotch, we're already whitewashing what it is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, but the thing is, yeah, it's a lot of that, and it's a lot of people that, you know, it's funny because, and I've said it a few times, but I just think that sometimes the people having this idea that they're going to get some proximity to power, or that they're not the ones that's going to take an L, you know? There was a lot of that happened, particularly this past go-round, and a lot of that is, you know, and it's funny now, everybody talks about, you know, fuck around and find out and all of this other shit, and unfortunately, this is, I guess, the cycle for that. I hope that some people are looking at things a little bit more, I don't even want to say intelligently, but a little bit more connected. You know what I'm saying? The thing with Trump, particularly with someone like Trump, more than, I don't say anybody, but definitely more than Dick Cheney, is there was this, there's like a PR maxim where they say, if you get a little bit of dirt on you, then that kind of defines you. But if you covered in dirt, you can kind of move beyond, because it's like, well, where do we start? You know what I mean? It gets exhausting. Mm-hmm. So he just keeps the gas pedal going. Now, he's an outlier in that. He's got a lot of copycats. People are trying to do what he can do or whatever, trying to do what he does, whatever. But even him.
They can't be him. They can't be him. Yeah.
And it's starting to, you know, his shit is starting to wear a little thin. You know what I mean? He's gotten way down there. I mean, he's in the books. You know what I'm saying? But
but he 80 years old.
Yeah, he on his way out.
He technically can't run again, even though he's, if you think Trump, he's, you know, he does this thing where he floats something out, tweet about it, say, hey, I don't know, maybe this. We should look into that. He's said multiple times he's running in 2028, multiple different leaders from other countries. And even Gavin Newsom's like, yeah, Trump's team sends me Trump 2028 merch all the time. If you think Trump is not going to try to figure out a way to run again. And he's even had Supreme Court justices openly talk about, well, that's like, not say it with assurance that you can't run again. Yeah. Like, that is, they've said that out publicly in interviews. So it's like, if he's not, he's laying the groundwork to run again.
Yeah.
Like, or try to run again.
He ain't never stopped campaigning. he ain't stopped campaigning since 2020. This guy is. Chain. All right. Well, listen, we went crazy on the politics. I mean, you are a political correspondent. You know what I'm saying? I can feel people.
What else going on?
You know,
on?
I mean, let's talk about some lifestyle shit. What's going on, man? I know you're saying you want to talk about LeBron looking human out here or nah?
Finally. I mean, I wish it never happened. You know, I'm from Cleveland.
Yeah, no.
I'm a LeBron fan till he retires. I remember him being in high school and all the buzz.
Yeah.
But he just the last game, he just bounced back and had 29 or 30, right, or something like that. But right, he had the longest streak ever of at least getting double digits, which is just 10 points. And he couldn't get 10 points off of 14 shots. I remember I was watching the game, and I was like, couple times he went up, just got blocked. Like, he got blocked like two or three times. And it was like, oh. But I mean, he's about to be, what, 41 in a couple weeks?
I guess.
Playing 23 years. I mean, yeah. I think he deserves to look slightly human.
Yeah, he's human. It's Father Time. He's a old man in basketball, you know. And I kind of think that this 10-point streak stat is some TV shit. You know what I mean? Nobody would have even known had they said, nobody's at the house like, yo, hold on now. This has been how many games since LeBron has been under 10 points? Like, he has been declining over.
Technically, he extended his 8-point streak. So it's like, right, it's a random number.
It's like a random, there's some shit. You know, that's what sports going to do. They're going to create some type of story to tell to make it interesting. I mean, yeah. The fact of the matter is, LeBron has been declining for a little while, or, you know, he's not as dominant, I'll say. He's still good for a bunch of, you know, different things. There's a lot more asterisk and caveat when it comes to him now. He's 41 years old. He's a league of his own, you know what I mean, as far as a 41-year-old NBA player. You know what I mean? He still leads the league in effectiveness in 41-year-old NBA players who, you know, whatever.
Something I heard the other day when they was talking about it, they said LeBron has played against 40% of people who've ever played in the NBA.
That's crazy. And he's right. he played against, I think, more father and sons than anybody in the NBA. Like, he's done it all. He's done a lot. I don't say he's done it all, but he's done a lot. And everybody know I'm a casual sports fan, so I don't even get too crazy with it. But what I will say is, as far as LeBron's concerned, in my mind, he's already in the books. We know that he's in the Hall of Fame. He's one of the greatest of all time. And for me, you know, one, it's really hard to go out on top. It's very few people that have gone out on top just overall, not even in sports. But I think that what I most appreciate about LeBron, not even his winning, but I just like how he used his power. How he leveraged his power, he put his boys on.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? How he wasn't afraid.
And now they institutions probably on their way to making.
For sure.
If Rich Paul would probably be a billionaire before it's all said and done.
Maybe. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. But, you know, like that, you know, putting his squad on, being politically active, you know, that shit like that, you know, creating productions, like just his business moves in the way of, you know, with Nike and all of this other shit. Like, I think he's influenced a whole new generation of savvy athletes, not even just basketball players, but savvy athletes in a way that maybe Kobe inspired people as far as competition goes and Jordan inspired people as far as greatness and competition goes. I think that LeBron has brought something like, I won't say just a mogul energy, but like, he's affected the game beyond the court. And that shit is way more impressive than a 10-point streak. You know what I'm saying? Like, niggas ain't gonna be talking about that shit in 2 years.
And he did it scandal free.
Yeah. I think so. You know, I just like niggas to cross the get through the tape before I start saying shit like that, boy.
Scandal free.
Yeah, man. Hopefully he does. Hopefully he's good. You know what I mean? I know there was hairline gate. You know what I'm saying? Or whatever.
I mean, if that's just
I know, that's a beautiful thing. But anyway, he's fine.
Man. You think he's better than Jordan now? Is he the greatest NBA player ever?
I think that's all generational. I think all that's generational. Jordan, I lived through the Jordan era. Jordan was fucking exciting. And Jordan was exciting on a level that I don't think LeBron has ever been as exciting. Like, LeBron is great. LeBron is he's good. He's a bad motherfucker. But, like, Jordan was like a pit bull meets a fucking ballerina. You know what I'm saying? Like, this nigga was doing shit. Like, it was like something that you never seen before. And it was also tied to my formative years. You know what I'm saying? LeBron is a bad motherfucker. Yeah. So
that's it. I mean, we're about the same age. So
kinda, but not really. You know what I mean? It's a few
days. We're only a couple years off. Okay. And I saw Jordan.
Uh-huh.
You mean even though I was raised in Cleveland, you mean my parents were both born and raised in Chicago. I was born in Chicago. I moved when I was young to Cleveland. So, I mean, I seen Jordan, been to games when I was a kid. I think it is kind of like, I'll compare it to like the Michael Jackson, Chris Brown.
Yeah.
In the sense of the time we were in, because there wasn't as much media. You had less exposure to them so that the media machine, the advertising machine could hype them up. Nobody's ever going to be as big of a star as Michael Jackson was. Nobody's ever going to be as big of a basketball sports star as Michael Jordan was in his prime, but that's because the time has changed.
Yeah, I think also, too, and again, it might be, like I said, it's a generational thing. I just think that culturally, not only on the court, like I said, LeBron is great as far as what he's leveraging with his power and things like that, right? But as far as, like, pop culture impact in the way of, I look at Jordan also played a part, like how we're talking about how LeBron played a part in Rich Paul becoming, he may become a billionaire or something like that, right? Jordan played a part in fucking Spike Lee becoming like so impactful as a filmmaker. Jordan's sneaker, like what he did with the culture with sneakers is like just, like, it's a different thing. Niggas has never been, like, LeBron, he's had a few.
LeBron's was cool. He had a couple.
He had a couple.
And I doubt that LeBron's going to feel the same way in 20 years.
For sure. They not. You know what I mean? So there's things like that that just kind of, it just makes the Michael Jordan phenomenon even, you know what I mean? And then the fact that, you know, it's just back to back, like 2-3-peat, like it's certain things. But again, it's a generational thing. It's like who was affected. This is what I grew up on. There's a lot of people that still feel like Kobe was that guy. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of people that feel like LeBron is that guy. You know, like I think it all changes. They're all great. They're all great. But if you, long story short, if you ask me who do I think is the one, I'm still saying Jordan. That's just me. That's, you know what I mean? A man of a certain
age. No, I feel you. I feel you.
Who you got? I know you from Cleveland. Who you got?
I think this is what I'll say. I said Jordan is the best. Jordan is the
greatest.
Best player.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
Or the greatest player.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron has had the greatest career. Like, if I had to pick one of the two of the careers.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I still would pick a Jordan, and that's on the court. And I think, to me, I'm more worried about, because I love the NBA. I'm just worried about LeBron. Say he retired this year, he retired next year. It's probably going to be this year or next year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't imagine him being 43, 44
mm-hmm.
hooping, especially now that he's averaging under 20 points a game.
Right.
I think he'll get that average up and be intentional about that. He's not trying to have any season under 20 points a game.
Mm-hmm.
But when he leaves, it's like, what are we talking about? Because Steph Curry about to be gone, and he's already old. Like, I mean, we got a lot of young talent, but it's nobody with a narrative. I mean, LeBron came through and had multiple eras of narrative. And like, we don't have anybody who, like, the average person is like, I need to tune in to this person, whether I love him or hate him. We don't got nobody like that. That's universal.
Yeah, not in this moment. It might be a quiet moment. I mean, but that's what happens. It all shuffles. And, you know, the era between Jordan or even Kobe and LeBron, like, there are these quiet eras where the thing starts. But once LeBron is gone, there'll be the challenge for the media and you know, particularly the media, to create a storyline about somebody, to anoint somebody. It might be some false kings, you know what I'm saying? It might be some things like that they're going to try, and people, it's not going to work for these people. But at some point, somebody's going to come that's going to have some impact, that's going to have some staying power. And again, it's going to be a generational thing. Sometimes we might not even see it. And this motherfucker might be right now 16 years old. We don't even see this person coming. And when they come, it could be a whole different thing. Or it could even be a worldwide thing. It could be the Webinyama era. It could be the, you know, who knows, maybe Shay or who. I still fuck with Anthony. You know what I mean? I fuck with Anthony Edwards. I don't know if, you know, who knows what it's going to be. But it's some motherfuckers that's ready to make a name for themselves, for sure. For sure.
Yeah, I think it's going to be just hard to replicate, because, like, the shoes, cats not in rap videos. You know what I mean? Michael Jordan was in a Michael Jackson video.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Even back in the day, you had the Vince Carters and all that. Like, I feel like cats not really in rap videos like that. They're not. They're getting marketed, but it's so many people get marketed all over the place. So it's not like everybody's watching TV or everybody's in this movie. They're not making Space Jam movies like they used to. They're not building them up to be mythical figures. Cass is all on, you can see them all on social media and stuff. So it feels like that they're more accessible, but it also is like takes away from their mystique. And I think the mystique is what builds you up to like the cultural icon you can be.
Yeah.
And you got to win. Ain't nobody, you know what I mean? Nobody's like dominant winning all the time. Right. People winning games, they're not winning championships.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think it's going to be there's a shift. It's a shift on every level. I think that what makes people culturally dominant is shifting in the new generation, right? So maybe it's not about being in a rap video. There's damn near no rap videos anymore. You know what I'm saying? And people rarely go to the movies like when they used to. So it's like, what is the middle of culture is different now, right? And is mystique going to be as prized as it once was, right? Like nowadays, and who knows? But this is just, I'm just kind of just speaking as what I'm looking at now. Like, you seeing people stream for the entire evening, you know what I mean? Doing sleepovers on stream. That's the absolute opposite of mystique, you know? And you know what I mean? Like, motherfuckers, there was no way in the world might have been some Michael Jackson sleepovers, pause. But anyway, but I'm just saying, though, ain't nobody, Beyonce ain't having nobody at her house at 2 a.m. with cameras on and they chopping it up, you know. But this new generation is a different type of generation. You know, these people are raised on camera. You know what I'm saying? Like, these kids are coming into the game with an audience. So it's different, and it's going to be interesting to see how these people elect and determine who is the focal point. Or maybe it ain't even going to be. I don't know. Maybe it's not going to. I don't know. We'll see. It's going to be very interesting. It's going to be very interesting because what I think, you know, like the people that are hot to a certain demo, I probably don't even know these motherfuckers like that. Like, I know NBA YoungBoy has got people going crazy, seemingly. But I couldn't tell you nothing about that cat. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, he doing arena tours and.
Yeah.
Top streamed artist. I couldn't tell you one song.
Somebody asked me, my homie asked me today. He was like, yo, did you listen to the new, what's my man's name? The new SD Kid album.
I was like, I don't even know who that is.
Yeah, SD Kid. He's a cat. He got an album called Rebel. He's down with he's got a song called LV Sandals with this kid Fake Mink, whose name I've seen around or whatever. I listen to it. It's fine. It ain't for me, but you know what I mean? It's definitely not. When I listened to it in my house, I felt like the old nigga at the party. And I was in my house. You know what I mean?
In your house.
I was in my house. Like, I was in my kitchen. I still felt out of place listening to that shit. But that just goes to show, it ain't for me right now. I don't really got a vote. You know what I'm saying? I don't got a vote. I'm still the custodian of the old shit. I'm still over here talking about, yo, Jordan shit is hot. I'm still trying to buy Jordans that's uncomfortable. I think that's over. And I got a question for you, because I know you say you only fly in Jordans. Do you wear anything?
Yeah, that's my thing.
Do you wear anything besides Jordans, besides like when you're on the ground? Do you wear anything besides Jordans?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm trying to get out of that.
Yeah.
If I'm being honest.
I like niggas trying. I like that it's an effort to get out of it. You could just stop. Like, but go ahead.
I could stop, but I feel like it's a thing.
It's a and thing, it's, meaning I mean, what? No, talk to me. What you
it's
mean?
It's a thing that it's a thing that the whole I fly in Jordans, which, mind you, it was super arbitrary at one time because I didn't even get my first pair of Jordans. I wasn't a kid that had Jordans. I didn't get Jordans until I was a grown up.
Right.
And then I start hashtagging it. It looked good for the gram. Then it turned into I was speaking at some conference on a panel, and they were like, yo, and he's the man. Like, they in my intro, they're like, oh, he's the man. He only flies in Jordans. Mm-hmm. And I kind of kept it going as just like a tongue-in-cheek. I'm buying so few Jordans. To your point, Jordans is no longer the most comfortable. I'm heavy on these new Balances because them things feel like walking on water.
Right.
Adidas got way more comfortable shoes. It's so many more comfortable shoes to be walking around in that I'm buying. I'm having, just so I have fresh J's, I'm like having, I would say this year, literally this year, I had to consciously go buy Jordans because I'm just not, I'm also just not excited about sneakers like I was for so long. I probably had a good 10, 12 year run of like, I'm excited about new sneakers exclusive. Now I'm just looking at these exclusive, you trying to hit me with $400-$600 on the resale. I'm like, man, I need to be more responsible with my money. Let me put that in an index fund or something. Like, that's how I'm feeling about. So the sneaker game ain't, even the head nod, you know, that you get that head nod when you got a fresh pair of sneakers and somebody's like, oh, I like those.
Mm-hmm.
That don't feel as satisfying as it used to.
Yeah. Yeah. I dig it. I think the sneaker game has been stabilized. It's going down by cats coming to their senses. You know, one, I think age, people kind of, you know, the shit's not as comfortable no more. People kind of redirecting their finances. After a while, you've aged long enough to where you've gone through the cycle a couple times. You got the retro of the retro of the retro that you wanted. You know what I mean? And then
Once the retro comes back out and you got the white cement fours, and it's like, yo, this is the second time I've seen this since this was out 10, 12 years ago.
Right.
I was excited to get them. The Great Fives, perfect example.
Yeah.
Those Great Fives, they were made super famous by like Will Smith, Bel Air, Fresh Prince of Bel Air, and all that. Those were when those last retros came out. I don't know when this was. It must have been at least 10 years ago. I specifically remember having to go to the mall. I was in DC, having to go to Tyson's Corner, 45 minutes out. They dropped, and I think those might have been one of the last pair of shoes. Like, I'm waiting in line to get a ticket that's in the mall, out the door, at getting there at 3:30 in the morning to drop. Mind you, I'm grown by here. I'm still over 30 years old. And I thought it was ridiculous, but I was like, I got to get these shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And now those things came back out. And it's like, man, what'd I do all that extra effort for? Right. Now you could just buy them joints.
They sitting.
For sale at online.
And honorable mention to young white girls who was coming out there with fucking beat down Air Force Ones, which destabilized the whole culture. It gave 40-year-old black motherfuckers an existential crisis to see some shit like that. And that is what we needed. We needed that shit. Niggas need to be reminded that these shits ain't nothing but sneakers. It is what it is. Wear what you like. Don't become a prisoner.
Sneakers are meant to be worn.
Yeah, sneakers are meant to be worn. Nick, dude, I got so, and I hate this part of me. You know what I mean? But I got sneakers still in the closet, sitting up, dead stock, like ETFs. These shits ain't going to do nothing. Them shits is about to plummet. And it's like, my nigga, that's what made me say, come on, D, stop playing. Like, it's a fucking
hold
sneaker.
Hold up, you got sneakers you thought you was about to set? You was holding
not even and I set. Thought. I wasn't always on it. Like, I'm going to sell it, but I was like, I'll keep these shits. These shits is hard. It's like there's the Venn diagram of being a hoarder, living in scarcity, and then also trying to have some shit on ice, right? So you like, yo, everybody wants this sneaker. Somehow I got this sneaker for retail because I'm really one of these people that I don't really play too tough in the resale market. I've done it. I could count on one hand the amount of times I've ever paid resale for a sneaker. So boom, I got the sneaker, the sought after sneaker for box. So already, once I got it for box, I already see that this shit is going for at least three times that. And not only that, since it's going for three times that, everybody want that sneaker. So now everybody got that sneaker and it's kind of getting burnt out. Now I don't want to jump in the midst of the burnt out fray because it's not going to really resonate too crazy. It's just going to look like one of everyone else. Like I felt like sneakers was starting to get so monolithic. It was crazy. It's like everybody got the same six sneakers. So then boom, I'm like, I'll put those to the side. I'll break them shits out in a year or two. And niggas, oh shit, I forgot about those. Da-da-da-da-da. That's the thought. You know what I mean? And then you hoard on top of that. And then you might visit the StockX, you know what I'm saying? And seeing, oh, that shit's fucking 900 now. I paid 150. Wait a minute. Do I really want to pull them shits out or what? Do I want to sell them? And it's like,
You should have sold them.
There's quite a few. Down. Yeah, there's quite a few joints that I should have sold. And I'm going to tell you something. You don't wear a fire sneaker that you should have sold 2 years ago with the same gusto as you once had. I tell you that shit because it feels like you took a loss. You took a loss. Nigga got a pair. You got a W, but you took a loss. But it is what it is. This is dumb shit.
No, so that's different, I think, for you. To me, I would think you still have... Cause you a comedian,
right?
And you on stages,
right?
You still a performer. You in showbiz. You in the showbiz of it all,
right?
There's still some value in stepping on stage in front of crowds.
You would think, yeah, of course. You have a look. It's cool. You could do that. There's a couple things that I've noticed. One, back to the fact of it all, so many motherfuckers wearing the same exact sneaker. So. I don't like to be talking about the same shit as that motherfucker talking about on stage. I don't want to have the same sneaker. So there's that, right? Again, so you start to be a little strategic. I'm going to wear these. I'm going to wear that. The other thing is if we're talking about clip culture, honestly, more often than not, sneakers don't even make the clip. You know what I'm saying? Most motherfuckers is torso up. You don't even know what kind of sneakers they had on. And I'm a older cat, so it don't even matter as much to me. Like you said earlier, like the nod, that shit don't mean nothing to me. You know what I mean? Like, all right, good looking. I appreciate it. Good looking out, my nigga. Thank you. I appreciate it. It's all right. That's fine. You know what I'm saying? That's fine. It just don't. It
you
don't
said
hit
the, nod
the same.
Don't mean,
the, not the don't, same. Not the same. Nah. It is what it is. It's that. You know what I mean?
Not for as much money as we spend on it.
Yeah.
As much brain power.
Yeah. It's like, and then I think I like the fact that the sneaker market has stabilized. And I also like this trend of people wearing GRs again. You know what I mean? Because now we getting back into, let me see how you play your sneakers. Like that kind of got away from us when shit was like, these are the sneakers to get. Back in the days when sneakers were available and it was just a wall of sneakers, it was on you to be like, I'm getting those. You know what I mean? I can't afford those. I'm going to get those, but I'm going to play them shits in a way to where people going to look at those like those over there. They're going to be like, oh, shit, nigga, I see you. Okay. You know what I mean? Like that
see how
nod.
You pulled the fit off.
Yeah, that nod felt better than, okay, I see you have the sneaker that everyone has. You know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah, I got it.
But
I
to your point, I think it's probably more just age and maturity. It's like,
for sure.
You're talking about you was doing that as a teenager, 20-something, even early 30-something.
Mm-hmm.
And we... grown men in our 40s. We shouldn't be that worried about it.
Right. Not the nod. You know what I'm saying? That ain't gonna change your day. That ain't gonna change your day. You trying to figure some shit out. Trying to figure some shit out. That nod was cool. It was nice. You know what I'm saying? Shit, man. But anyway. We had a good conversation, man. We chopped it up about a lot of things, got heated about we got in depth about the politics on the front hand. But you are a political correspondent, so I always like to hear your insight on things. You got anything coming up that you want the people to check for? Before we get out of here?
No, I would say definitely check for me on social. I'm working with a new team right now, so we're trying to do more around politics, around now that we've got the radio. So please tune in every Tuesday morning if you got SiriusXM, the app on your phone, on your way to work, in the gym. Channel 126, Urban View Morning Radio. I'm there every Tuesday, 7 to 10 a.m. Check out all the old episodes of the Hip Politics podcast, HIP-Politics, on social, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, all the places you can get a podcast. That's out. Now we got a season 5. I'm recording this. Season 5 is coming in January 2026.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would say all the other stuff is just follow me on social, Mr. Cameron Calvin, MrCameron Calvin, CALVIN on Instagram. I'm trying to get my TikTok up. That makes me sound old.
get it going. Yeah.
And try to get I've been on TikTok. It's just like, and it's funny, it's like, I'm a paid digital strategist. I make my money. You know what I mean? I'm a partner at a firm where we do digital strategy, social media strategy, advertising. But it's like, I don't put half of the techniques people pay me to use on myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to do more there. But no, that's it, man. I'm looking forward to holiday season. Oh, my birthday's coming up.
When's your birthday?
December 21st.
Okay.
Birthday's coming up. My mother's birthday, she's happy to say this, so I can say it. She's about to be 70 on New Year's Eve.
Nice.
So it's like, I'm excited. I'm excited for the holidays to spend a little time working on the business and spend some time with family, you know what I mean? Tapping back in for a little bit.
There you go.
What you got coming up?
What do I have coming up? Most importantly, December 27th, Eastville Comedy Club. I'm going to be headlined, doing an hour there. We're going to bug out. So tickets are on sale now. That's beyond that. I got a few things coming up. I got some stuff I'm about to throw up on the YouTubes. That's some things I'm shooting. That's it for the moment. To be totally honest with you, besides this... the show at Eastville and these projects that I'm working on, I'm cool until 2026. I'm sitting back and I'm trying to plan for 2026. You know what I mean?
I don't think enough of us do that.
Yeah, I think I'm out of office for a little while. You might catch me on the stage here and there. Follow the Instagram stories for the pop-up shit. But beyond that, the thing that's on the calendar right now, it's December 27th, Eastville Comedy Club. Going to do something there. And that's it for right now. You know what I mean? And shit.
Well, man, I appreciate you. Appreciate you having me on the pod. I always love to be in the conversation, man.
No doubt. I appreciate you coming through, man. I appreciate you coming through. Always a pleasure. And as always, tell a friend to tell a friend.
And maybe even an enemy.
To get in the conversation. We out. Hello. The main thing of it all is to be in the conversation.